no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Our hour of old-time radio begins with Voyage of the Scarlet Queen this week. We'll hear The Wandering Master and the Warlord at Rest, their story from December 10th, 1947. After that, it's Escape and Up Periscope, their story from August 8th, 1951.
Log entry, The Catch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position, 4 degrees 5 minutes south, 150 degrees 26 minutes east. Wind fresh, sky fair. Remarks, departed Rabaul, New Britain Island at dawn with one crewman in sick bay due to trouble on ship. Reason for trouble, the wandering master and the warlord at rest. Hot morning when we slipped through St. George's Channel, Blanche Bay. It had been a long leg and a slow one down into Simpson Harbor from French Indochina. But now things speeded up. In a day, we had our cargo unloaded into the China traders' warehouses, and on the next day, another cargo was swinging aboard, bound for a plantation on Hull Island in the Phoenix Group. At noon that day, Gallagher and I leaned on the rail, watching the whole town of Rabaul gather at our pier to welcome the tubby little steamer up from Canberra by way of Port Moresby. The crowd didn't mean that anyone of importance was arriving. The ship itself, a link with the outside world, was enough to bring out the natives with their green, blue, even yellow-dyed hair. The Orientals from Rabaul's Chinatown. The portly German planters. Enough even to bring Rabaul's never-small crowd of ne'er-do-wells stumbling out of the bars and into the hot sunlight. The excitement was contagious. Red and I moved forward to watch the steamer warp her rusty stern into the dock, squeezing in just off our bowsprit, shaking the Queen in her backwash, drawing the crowd to a point as her gangway went out and her passengers started to disembark.
Well, that old hunk of barnacle and rust really brings out the town, don't it, Skipper? We didn't get a show like that.
Yeah, but neither does the Lurline in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's right.
But don't worry, Red, the Queen's prettier. Anybody can see that.
Probably leave that beat-up tub in our wake, too, with it.
The skipper.
Huh?
On the gangway.
Red. No, it can't be.
Yeah. There's that Texan Mangan trailing along the stern.
That's Ah Sin.
Yeah.
All the way to Rabaul to cross courses with Ah Sin.
He turned his be-robed, jasmine-scented bulk toward us, and we got a better look at that 300-pound profile. Ah Sin had meant trouble in Tianjin, trouble in Bali. I hoped he wouldn't mean trouble here. His mincing steps brought him closer. He flirted his handkerchief at us.
Ahoy! The Scarlet Queen?
Ahoy!
Most pleasant coincidence, sir. Most pleasant indeed. I would appreciate two of your crewmen to help me aboard.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in the voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Thank you.
Bring me a chair, Mr. Mangan. You must see that I'm utterly exhausted squeezing under this cabin.
All right, now don't fret, Austin. I'll get you a chair. This here chair is bolted down. You're going to have to walk to it.
The most thoughtless arrangement. The cabin of niggers that supports
the babyish face glistens with perspiration. The scent of jasmine filled the cabin. The handkerchief waved. The beady eyes snapped out from the folds of flesh. And his bulk finally settled into a chair. He still looked Chinese, and he still sounded like Charles Lawton.
No, now, gentlemen, I must say I am greatly pleased at the twist of fate that has once more brought us together.
Yeah, I've
said
it.
I said, in fact, to Mr. Mangan as we rounded Vulcan Island, there is a familiar craft. Did I not, Mr. Mangan?
Oh, you sure did. He spotted you right now. Say, Carney.
Hmm?
You ain't got a little old jug hid away somewhere, have you? My throat is dry and trailed up.
Yeah, sure, man. Red, you want to break out a bottle? We'll have a round or two.
Yeah, I could use one myself.
Well, now, Captain Carney, if I might inquire, what brought you to Roval?
Well, we're carrying cargo now for the China traders.
Uh-huh.
Taking one out of here, bound for the Phoenix Group. How about you? You have interest here?
My dear boy, I have interest everywhere, but not at this particular moment. We are here for a rest. Are we not, Mr. Mangan?
Oh, you bet you. Like we say down in Texas, we're money rich and liquor poor and loaded for bear.
Picturesquely put, Mr. Mangan. As a matter of fact, sir, Mr. Mangan and I were seated in Singapore, faced with the tedium of here transaction, there transaction, everywhere transaction. We decided to get away from it all. And I remembered I had a small interest in the splendid hotel in Roval. And, here we are. Are we not, Mr. Mangan?
Yeah, just Johnny on the spot.
Here's the proof.
Thanks, Red.
Oh, thank you, Redhead.
Well, here, gentlemen, to the fate has seen us to our juxtaposition.
Good bottle, Red.
Now, I must insist that you join us in an hour at the hotel. It's on Casuarina Avenue, right at the corner of Chinatown.
Yeah? You know, the last two times we were mixed up with you, Stinky, we had something you wanted.
Now, just a minute, Cap. I ain't gonna stand here straddle-legged and let you talk that way about all things.
Thank you, Mr. Mangan. Captain Carney, I had thought that our association deserved better than this. You will admit that we've always parted friends.
Yeah. Well, all right, Austin. We'll see you at the hotel in an hour.
Oh, splendid, sir, splendid. We shall have a merry time.
Oh, look at this. He say he owned this place? Oh, there he is.
Well, howdy, y'all.
Oh, Mangan.
Yeah, Austin howdy. Wants you to come on back here where he's at. Come on, it's on the main floor. Oh, and listen.
Hmm?
He has found the cutest little old southern gal that you ever saw.
Southern what?
I mean real south. Freeport, Louisiana.
Oh, what's she doing down here, Mangan?
Oh, she's a painter. Austin's buying some of her painting. I don't think they're very much, but she's doing it for money. And Austin, well, he's kind of that away now. Come through here.
Yeah.
She ain't much for thinking, either. But is she pretty? Miriam Lou Parmalee. Oh, don't that put you in mind them Louisiana pines?
Not yet. I haven't seen it.
Well, you're just a cold-blooded Yankee. That's how come. All right, here's the room. All right, here they are, old man.
Splendid. Splendid, splendid. You find me surrounded by pleasant things, gentlemen.
So I see.
How do you do it, Austin?
Indeed, at times I ask myself. This gentleman is Miss Miriam Lou Parmalee.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Parmalee?
How do you do, both of you?
Miss Parmalee is an artist of not inconsiderable ability.
Oh, thank you.
See her, Captain, this painting of the native squatting sullenly in the bush. Is it not a stirring scene, sir?
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
She calls it Warlord at Rest. She refused to sell it to me.
You know, he is just the stubbornest man I ever met. It's sold. I kept telling him that. I can't sell it again. It's already sold.
There, you see, she is determined to resist me.
Well, you're facing an honest woman, Austin. That's your trouble.
Yes, a most puzzling attribute. Very well, I will try to satisfy myself with my second and third choice.
Well, I'm sure you'll be real happy with him, and thank you ever so much.
Oh, yes, of course. The matter is closed. Now then, I have arranged for a table in the hotel dining room spread for our pleasure with food and drink. I will carry my purchases to my room and join you. Miss Parmalee, I trust that you will accept my meager hospitality.
Oh, goodness. I don't know if I ought to with all four of you men. I don't know y'all very well, you know.
Oh, now, honey, me and you ain't strangers. Shuckins, we from Dixie.
Yes.
And I pledge to you, my dear, I shall be your chaperone.
Oh, well, all right.
Now, go along now, all of you. I will join you presently.
Hey, this is quite a layout, Skipper.
That looks all right, mate.
Oh, goodness, you know, I didn't realize I was so hungry till I saw all this food.
The table in the dining room was set to everyone's taste, loaded with the best the hotel had to offer. Austin joined us in about 20 minutes.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Austin. Where you been? Everything is just a tasty.
Ladies and gentlemen, in an effort to provide the crowning touch, I personally went to the cellar to obtain this magnum.
Magnum?
Mum's very old Cordon Rouge. Now, let us all enjoy this festive occasion.
Oh, it's bubbly. That makes me dizzy.
In spite of the fact that Austin had usually meant trouble, we did have a festive dinner. But after an hour or so, I excused myself. Went to the China trader's office to go over some final details on the cargo. It was another hour before I was finished and headed back to the ship. Night was falling when I got there, so I checked and saw the cargo gear was secured for sea, hatches covered, everything okay. Then I went into my cabin. My gangway watch, Nielsen, was backed up against the forward bulkhead. Two men had guns trained on him. Two more put the same drop on me. What the devil is this?
Sit down.
I can hear you standing up. I said, what is this?
It could be harmless if you cooperate. I am Carl von Stoughton.
I'm glad to hear it. Now that we've met, take your helpers and get off this ship.
Don't pretend ignorance, Captain Carney. Your crewman already told me that the Chinese Austin has been here on the ship. That is enough.
I don't know what you're talking about. What is this, Nielsen?
They don't know, sir. That fat Chinese came down with a package a little while ago. He said you were taking it for him. I thought it was all right to let him aboard. He'd been here before.
Yeah, all right, Nielsen.
So now you will stop the show of ignorance, Captain, and tell me where is the picture hidden.
I'll make sense, will you? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know about any picture.
I thought you would be reasonable.
Martin, put him in that chair.
All right, sit down.
Come on.
All right, lay off, will you?
Martin, I'll watch him. You and Emil search the cabin.
Yeah, we'll search it all right.
I hope for your sake, my father, Connie, that they come find that painting.
I don't care how far you came looking for it. You're talking to the wrong guy.
If we got here a day later, you would be gone. Then you would be the right guy. That Austin is a blundering fool.
Well, go take it up with him, then.
Look here, Herr von Stoughton. The painting. It was under the mattress on the bunk.
Why, that dirty...
Good, fat. Let me see. The warlord at rest. It is the one. Good. Now we have met success. Martin, the crewman, drive on follow.
Hey. Drive on follow.
Hey, stay away from that man.
Sit down.
Look, I'm telling you don't knock my crewman around.
Martin, here. Hold him, Emil. I'll put him down.
Come on, Skipper. Try and get this slug down. Come on.
Yeah, go away.
Come on, drink it. You all right, Skipper?
Yeah. Where's Nielsen?
He's still out, but I'll get to him.
Where's that Austin?
I don't know. He left the party just a little while before I did.
Yeah.
Who slugged you?
A guy by the name of von Stott. Give me a hand, Red. I want to get up.
Yeah. Who's behind it? Austin?
I guess so. What did they do with that bulkhead? That crummy warlord painting he was drooling over, he must have swiped it from the dame's room. Then he planted it here in the cabin, and von Stoughton showed up with three gunmen looking for it.
What?
That stale picture? That mess?
What are they, weak in the head? It's not worth $5, much less this, is it?
I don't know, but I'm just about ready to go back to that hotel and find out. Which room is Arsene's, do you know?
Yeah, it's 21, right at the top of the stairs.
All right, you stay here, will you, Red?
Right.
Pull Nielsen out of it and see that he stays in the sack for the rest of the night.
Okay.
I'm going to see what I can do to pay Stinky for this knot behind my ear.
And I ain't paid no attention to some of them things, Arsene, but that poor little helpless gal, that is different. If you... Connie, what in thunder do you want?
I
want
to see Fatso.
You make a most opportune entrance, sir. You find me in serious circumstances.
Well, you can say that again.
And once more for me.
Captain, I beg of you, prevail upon Mr. Mangan. He is using me badly, sir. I am in dire need of your help.
Help? You want help from me?
Oh, my dear fellow, is that such a strange request?
You darn right it is, Austin. Anybody that puts a poor helpless little gal on a chopping block like you done, Miriam, don't deserve nothing but a fast kick in a pistol pocket.
Oh, dear me, Mr. Mangan, I... had never expected threats like that from you.
And anybody that makes a pigeon out of a guy after pumping a lot of bilge about sincere friendship rates the same thing.
From here to the harbor.
Oh, good heavens, sir. Do you mean you've been placed in the position of a pigeon?
Yes, exactly. Here, this knot behind my ear. See it? Oh. One of my crewmen's got one just like it. We got them from a guy named von Stolt, who came down after that painting you planted on my ship.
He made off with the warlord address?
Yes, he made off with it. And the only reason he didn't get it as a gift was because I didn't know where it was.
You see, Austin, you stirred up our fine kettle of fish.
Yes, I must admit, I seem to have managed things very badly.
Well, that is just for sure. Poor little Miriam disappeared. Now the painting's gone. It serves you right for taking it off of her instead of being man enough to get it off that von Stolt.
Indeed, I have erred most seriously. Gentlemen, we must regroup.
Regroup. I'm going to do it someplace where you aren't.
Yeah. Darn if that don't sound like a good idea.
Well, Captain and Mr. Mangan, my dear fellow.
What?
The situation does not affect the proximity of the painting, nor does it decrease its fabulous value one whit.
Fabulous. Why don't
we must
stop
at
that?
Once forget these slight differences which have risen between us and set out post-haste to gain possession of it.
I'm sure you're kidding, but in case you aren't, forget me.
Well, perhaps if you understood, sir.
Understood what?
The canvas is in reality an original painted in 1590 by the fabulous Venetian Giacomo Robusti.
So?
It was wrested from one of Europe's most famous museums during the last great conflict by the armed forces of our common enemy, sir. It was recently stolen from its South American hiding place, brought here, and its identity hidden behind that gruesome daub, the warlord at rest, which was smeared over it.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make me any more interested. It sounds like international law to me, and I had enough even on the outskirts.
Well, indeed, sir, you surprise me. I took you for a man of spirit.
Oh, don't listen at him, Corny.
Thanks, Mangan, I won't. I just want to
go back into that room, Captain, if you like this gun the way it is.
Well, von Stolt.
Don't move, any of you. Move back, Captain.
All right, von Stolt. My company wasn't any better before you dropped.
Over there with the others.
Well, I must say, von Stolt, that your arrival is in the way of a surprise.
I have come for the painting, and I want no delay.
Oh, what old painting? This heat's got you local.
Why don't you make up your mind, von Stolt?
I said I want no delay. Captain, due to the possibility that the painting is still hidden on your ship, my men have taken command.
What?
You won't board it until I say so.
And now, look,
my dear man, I had supposed, since you so forcefully grasped control of the situation, that you did have the painting.
I want no talk. The warlord at rest is at stake, and you know it. I removed some of the paint and found bare canvas beneath.
A stunning surprise, sir. Is it possible that the journey for both of us has been a wild goose chase? A most disquieting thought, is it not?
It is not my thought. I have you in another one of your clumsy attempts at deception. I have it from the girl herself. You had her painting copied. Then you led me to the ship. You thought I would take the fake and leave the island without examining it.
Oh, dear me, what a brilliant plan. But, of course, sir, that it was not the case. The girl lies.
She would not lie with the methods I used to get the truth from her.
What happened,
me? Take it easy, Megan.
Watch me, Corny. We're going to take that polecat.
You there. What was that? What did you say?
I was just telling my partner.
Don't move or I shoot.
I was just saying what I got a right to say about any yellow-hound dog that manhandles a woman.
Never mind the talk.
My papa would turn over in his grave if he thought any son of his and didn't speak his piece.
I thought it was Texas temper and a soft spot in his heart for the Southern belle. Until he moved in front of me. Then, when von Stolt ordered him to a halt, he stepped back toward me until his heels almost touched my toes. He stood with his hands on his hips as he talked. Then I saw why. He inched the back of his coat up with his fingers so I could see the pearl handle of the Frontier model Colt he wore in his hip pocket. I took it out, slipped it behind me.
Well, you just do something to her, you're dead.
And when Mangan stopped talking, I moved up and started in so he could get the Colt out of my hands. It only took a few words.
I'm sick enough of this to tell you where that painting is, von Stolt.
And you aren't stupid like the others. But I ain't through yet.
Von Stolt's right shoulder jerked, then his left. Mangan had put both arms out of operation in the space of time between two heartbeats. Von Stolt staggered back, hit the wall, and slid down into a sitting position.
Splendid, Mr. Mangan. And you, Captain, a thrilling moment, sir.
I'm glad we're entertaining you.
Well, don't you go thinking I've done this to help you get that blasted painting off, then, because I didn't do it for that reason. He's got that poor little gal hid out, and I aim to find her. First, I got to squeeze where she's at out of this polecat before he passes out. All right, you coming right on in this other room with me. You're going to tell me where you got that little gal hid at and right now.
Captain, with the admission that I've been a dismal failure, I ask one more thing.
Now what?
I beg of you, go with Mr. Mangan. Save him from himself. Realize that suddenly, sir, he has become a blindly infatuated fool. The barbs of Cupid, sir, that treacherous little imp, have bitten deep. You will go, sir.
Yeah, I'll go. For one good reason, I'm going to need Mangan to help me clear my ship of von Stoat's gunmen. And don't think I'm forgetting that you got me into this.
Oh, indeed I shall not, sir. I fear the painful thought of it will bear me company for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Unless you just happen to fall into that painting.
Oh, yes, I am quick to admit, as must we all, that final success is a miraculous anesthetic.
Mangan and I left von Stoat trussed up in Arsene's suite and went to find Miriam Lou Parmalee. She was staked out in a room on the second floor of the European Hotel. She was gagged and lashed to the head and foot of an iron bed. Her face was bruised from open-hand slaps. Her arms from hands that had twisted them.
My kin was
But her
just
spirit was
died.
Undamaged.
They knew that any... Well, I didn't think there was nobody so dreadful outside of the storybooks. I was so mad I could have spit. I think I did.
Well, everything is all right now, honey.
Sure it is, Miriam Lou. Just calm down.
Well,
and
if I'd had an inkling, just one little old inkling of the kind of men that I was going to meet out here, I'd never have come. I tell you that I never would have come.
Sure
they
you
lied to me, every last one of them.
Well, whoa now, Shucky. You're too pretty to go throwing a tizzy like this.
How was I going to know? A girl would just be silly not to come out here to paint with all the expenses paid just to do a tiny bit of cheating. Like they wanted.
Yes.
But if I'd have known about those men, I wouldn't have come. No, I swear I wouldn't have come. Why, he hit me. He hit me and he slapped my face and he twisted my arm until I was just so mad. I was so mad I couldn't tell him what he wanted to know.
Well, don't you fret no more now, Sugar.
I will so. I'm just seething inside.
Miriam Lou, what did you do to make them so mad?
Why, nothing. Why, not one single thing. Well, I tell you that I just decided that if that old picture was worth so much money and they was making me do all the work, well, I just as much right to it as they did. I did. So I just packed it up. I just packed it up and I sent it on home to Shreveport. What's the matter?
Why, nothing, honey. Not a solitary thing is the matter.
Well, after what I've been through, now don't you think I deserve it?
Why, absolutely, Miriam Lou.
You know, you keep looking at me so funny, Miss Lane.
Oh, that's just my heart looking at you, baby. You got me looping, darn it. You're so pretty.
Oh, now, Mr. Mangan, shut up. He's joshing with me, isn't he?
Why, Miriam, you've read enough storybooks to know a slave when you see one, haven't you?
He's a slave?
No, sure.
Well, now, you're the kind of a lady that brings honor and glory to the South, honey.
Thank you.
From sheer natural beauty and nothing else.
You know, you could just lead me around with those pretty words like that, Mr. Mangan. I just know you could.
Well, I'm going to start in right now.
Mangan.
Oh, yeah. I got a little job to do with the captain first.
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to take you to your hotel, and you stay in your room till I come back. And then we're going to talk this thing over.
Oh, but I've told you everything honest across my heart and set me to spin, and I've told you every little thing. There's nothing more to say.
Well, don't you fret none about that. We'll find something, huh? I'm darn sure of that.
With the key to the situation a few thousand miles away from the action, the payoff was simpler than I'd expected earlier. Von Stoat fainted a couple of times on the way to the Queen, as much from disappointment at finding no old master under any of Miriam's paint as from the pain in his arms. But Mangan's colt kept him on his feet, and later kept him covered while Red and Nielsen and I paid back von Stoat's helpers for the lumps on our heads. Then Mangan escorted them all off the ship. But we had one more visitor later that night. I was on deck, listening to the gramophone that's inevitable in ports of Chinese citizenry, and the soft breeze carried his jasmine scent before him. I saved him the climb up the gangway by crossing it to meet him on the dock.
Captain Carney, there is great sadness in me.
Lost your face again, Arsene?
Please, Captain, I am a successful merchant, sir, and it is most unfair that a man of my stature in the world of business should be treated as shabbily as I've been today.
Oh, come on, Arsene. Everybody knows it wasn't your fault. I think you put up a pretty game fight.
Uh-huh.
Even if Nielsen and I were the ones that got hit.
Well, I'm glad to hear you mention my valiant fight, sir, for it brings me to the subject I would like to discuss with you.
No? What's that?
Well, the fact is, sir, that my valiant battle, my never-ending effort to succeed is, at this moment, the one bright spot in my life.
Uh-huh.
I am determined, therefore, to keep it alive. Captain, I would pay you handsomely for passage to Shreveport, Louisiana, so that I might continue my attempts to gain possession of that fabulous painting, sir, and thereby regain my face and reputation.
Can't be done, Arsene.
You refuse me, sir? You withdraw the hand that could help me?
Yeah, I have to. Shreveport isn't a seaport.
Very well, then. Since both you and the misnamed city are so uncooperative, sir, I shall endeavor to find other means of conveyance. But mark my words, Captain. I am at this moment en route to Shreveport. Good evening, sir.
By dawn that morning, we were en route to the Phoenix Group, picking our way out through Blanche Bay, past Vulcan Island, and into the wind that swept around New Britain. The crewmen jumped to their stations, flexing fingers still stiff from sleep, throwing glances back at the island looming on our stern. Strong bodies leaned on the halyards. The whiteness of the mainsail slid smoothly up into the dawn sky. The jibs rattled up. Then the mizzen swung out, and the Scarlet Queen swung a curved wake as I turned her, and her bow split, and the figurehead beneath bowed to the crescent of sun that was climbing out of the ocean horizon.
Ah, it's a great morning, Jim.
Yeah, I guess we'll keep it, Red.
Ah, it was a wonderful port. Lots of interesting people.
The best the Orient, Texas, and Shreveport have to offer.
Yeah.
Wish I could make up my mind whether Miriam was stupid and honest or smart and crooked.
Well, she's the only one who made a profit. That sounds smart to me.
But the way she made it doesn't. And anybody who'd paint pictures like that warlord at rest.
Yeah. What a pain.
Yeah, Mangan can have it, huh? I'll settle for ours.
I'm kind of stuck on it myself. Here, Skipper. To the Queen?
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry, The Catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Wind, fresh to moderate. Sky overcast. Sea cresting with high cross swell. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Carney, Master.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
You, finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to the Yellow Sea and the story of a man who fought the entire Japanese Navy with an ancient submarine and an untrained crew, as Alec Hudson tells it in his exciting story, Up Periscope.
It happened in 1938. Pearl Harbor was just another naval base somewhere in the Pacific, and China, still further away, was swarming with Japanese invaders. And in 1938, a United States submarine, the S-52, docked at Pearl Harbor, and I walked down her gangplank. No longer a commanding officer, merely Lieutenant Thomas J. Baker, USN, retired. I said a fond farewell to the bosun's mate, tucked my commissioning pennant under one arm, moved into the Moana Hotel on Waikiki, just outside Honolulu. And an hour later, I was at the Moana Bar, sipping an exotic Hawaiian drink known as bourbon and water, and toasting my lost career in silence. That was until a strange little man behind horn-rimmed glasses tapped my elbow.
Excuse me, please. Let me buy this drink for you, Lieutenant Baker.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, you do not know me, of course. But I have spent some hours searching for you, Lieutenant.
I didn't get the name.
It is Lee, Sung Lee. You are, of course, the former commanding officer of the submarine S-52.
Yeah.
You docked at Pearl Harbor on Tuesday, and today, at precisely 12 o'clock noon, you were relieved of your command by your executive officer.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
You received what your Navy refers to as a medical discharge. It was found that you are deaf in your left ear. Is that not correct, Lieutenant Baker?
Yeah.
You see, my facts are accurate.
Yeah.
I am an unofficial representative of the Chinese government. I have come to you with a business proposition.
A business proposition?
You are available, are you not?
Well, yeah, I think you could say that.
It is a pity that a young man such as yourself should have his chosen career destroyed by such a trivial matter as the hearing of a watch ticking.
You must have been there for the examination.
I am well aware of these matters. All too often, your Navy acts somewhat hastily, without due consideration for all of the facts.
What's your proposition, Mr. Lee?
You are direct. That is good. Lieutenant Baker, I have come to offer you command of a Chinese submarine for action against the Japanese invaders.
I beg your pardon?
It is true. The Chinese government desires that you take charge of a submarine for operations at the mouth of the Yangtze River.
The Yangtze?
You are familiar with this area, of course. Then perhaps you would consider the following terms. We will pay you $1,000 each month, plus your expenses. In addition to this amount, you will receive a bonus.
Go on, Mr. Lee.
A bonus of $50,000 for each major Japanese ship you might sink.
$50,000?
That is correct. Your answer, Lieutenant Baker?
Maybe you better give me a little time, Mr. Lee.
Time is of the essence. That is an American expression, is it not?
Make it 1 week. A week from today.
Very well. 1 week from today, and we will have your answer. Need I remind you, Lieutenant, that in this matter, the utmost secrecy must be maintained.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, Mr. Lee.
Good. Thank you, Lieutenant. China will not forget you.
The market for slightly used submarine officers was at low ebb in 1938. So a week later, I met with Mr. Lee and three elderly Chinese. I made a counter-proposal. Would I be allowed to hire three key men of my own choice as assistants? Mr. Lee and friends agreed. And I found myself promoted. Lieutenant Commander Thomas J. Baker, Chinese Navy. I wired three ex-shipmates. Two answered. Chuck Young, an engineer who'd been paid off after 16 years of service. And Jimmy Mann, my old chief torpedoman from the boats in Panama. A week later, Young and Mann arrived. And 2 days after that, Young, Mann, and myself took the clipper for Hong Kong. Our destination, Amoy. On the decks of Amoy, we were met by a bright-looking young man in a light blue gown and a black silk Chinese cap. He introduced himself.
You are Captain Baker, is it not correct? I am Wong, your first officer.
Now, how do you do, Wong? This is our engineer, Chief Young.
Yeah, howdy.
And our chief torpedoman, Jimmy Mann.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Wong.
With deepest gratitude and humility, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, sure thing.
If you gentlemen will follow me now, I'll show you your quarters. This way, please.
Hey, Skip, what does he mean, show us to our quarters? I don't even see a boat.
You see a Chinese junk port side to up ahead?
Sure, but who signed up for a junk? I thought we was back in a pig boat, Navy.
Open your eyes, man. It's a decoy. Subs under that straw and bamboo.
Now, what is this, a game?
They're fighting a war over here, man. That means Jap bomber patrols.
Oh, I get it.
Congratulations.
Stow it. Here comes one.
Will you step aboard now, please?
All right.
Okay.
That's your thing.
This is Lieutenant Lu, Captain. Here's your second officer.
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Indeed, a pleasure to welcome you aboard, Captain.
What a Neptune, it's an S-boat.
It is indeed ancient, gentlemen, but we have kept it in good repair. Would you care to inspect our humble ship?
Yes, I would. Thanks, Wong.
Lieutenant Blue and myself will see that your quarters are in order, gentlemen.
1918 class. 12 knots surfaced, 8 submerged.
That means 2 main diesels, 500 horse each. I put 10 years in on one of these fish.
And 4 torpedo tubes forward. That ain't much bite, Skipper.
No, it's the best we've got. All right, you two, now you've seen her. One S-boat to fight the Jap Navy. Here's where you sign on or off. Young?
I'm on, Skipper.
Man?
We got a crew of Chinese farmers that can't speak a word of English. We got an S-boat somebody dredged up from under the main. We got officers wearing blue kimonos.
Man, on or off?
Okay, Skipper, I'm on.
Man was right about the crew. Outside of Lou and Wong, not a man among them could understand even pidgin English. One thing about our Chinese S-boat was universal: the smell. The smell of fuel oil and acid and humans at work. And we worked around the clock. I was given 30 days to mold 800 tons of iron into a ship and a mass of Chinese peasants into a fighting force. Young complained constantly, the way a chief petty officer or a sergeant complains, so I knew he was making out all right. But Jimmy Mann came up with a unique problem.
Okay, Skipper, so now we got torpedo fuel. Best darn torpedo fuel I ever tasted.
Since when did you switch to grain alcohol?
You know we ain't got no grain alcohol. It's just that I found us a substitute.
All right, tell me about it.
Well, it seems there was some gin on the docks one day. Several cases. By rigging up my own little still, I was able, with tears in my eyes, to change the gin into torpedo fuel.
Well, I'll see if the Chinese government hasn't got a spare Navy cross.
Just call me Kentucky Jim Mann. We're serving old torpedo in a galley.
I made an itemized list out on the Chinese S-boat. It showed no deck guns, sound gear worse than useless, no fire control system for firing the torpedoes, and no flood control. Then one day toward the end of the month, Chuck Young brought up the real problem.
I tell you, Skipper, it can't be done. These old batteries are next to worthless.
Well, you can't expect much of batteries that have been lying around a back channel for years.
Expect much? But, Skipper, batteries are the life of a sub. If we got no batteries, we got no boat.
I'm painfully aware of that, Chuck.
You know what happens to old batteries? They seep hydrogen. One of these days, we're going to be submerged, and the hydrogen is going to start leaking out, and wham! We'd blow up like a Chinese firecracker.
Then we'll have to be cautious.
Cautious? With hydrogen? You can't see the stuff. You can't hear it. You can't smell it. Something makes a spark, the whole boat blows sky high.
All right, Chuck, have you got any suggestions?
Well, outside of forgetting the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Get your engine room in order, Chief. We're sailing for the Yangtze tomorrow.
We will return to Escape and today's story, Up Periscope, in just a moment. Did you know that for only $10 you can supplement the food rations of a family of four for a whole month? Just send that $10 to CARE, spelled C-A-R-E, New York. CARE guarantees delivery of its packages to 11 different countries in Europe, as well as to India, Israel, and Japan. Don't forget to include your name and address and the name and address of the family you want to receive the CARE package, because CARE is a person-to-person international goodwill service. And now, back to Escape!
We sailed north through the Formosa Strait, traveling submerged, surfacing only after sunset. It took us 10 days to get to the latitude of the Saddle Islands. And in those 10 days, my Chinese crew behaved like veterans. Just north of the Saddles, we took up station across the most probable route of the convoys coming down from Japan. One afternoon, we were in the middle of one of those Saddle Island fogs, with a 5-knot wind that blew the stuff in patches. At about 5 o'clock, a patch of clear weather blew in, and we went down. My first officer, Lieutenant Wong, was standing next to me. When I brought her to periscope death and took a look around, my heart nearly jumped out of my mouth.
You have sighted something, Captain?
1, 2, 3.
four, five. Good Lord.
It is. Japanese convoy, Captain.
More than a convoy, Wong. An entire division. Heavy stuff. Battleships, cruisers, destroyers. Here, have a look.
Yes, Captain. It is, as you say. 4,000 or 5,000 yards.
They're lying stern to. They're anchored, waiting for the fog to lift. Wong, stand by to submerge.
But, Captain, an entire Japanese fleet...
Well, what do you think we're here for? Down periscope. Signal General Headquarters. We're going down to attack. Wong took the helm, and Lu was the diving officer, chanting his orders in sing-song Cantonese to the bow and stern planesmen. And in 2 minutes, our S-boat was ready to attack.
Torpedo tubes loaded and ready, Skipper.
Steady on course 210, Captain.
We'll run parallel at 1,500 yards. Hard right rudder.
Hard right rudder, sir.
Up periscope. Up periscope, sir. Steady on course 090.
090, sir.
Consigin hold.
We'll take the battle wagon first, Wong. That's Matsui class. Come left 5 degrees.
Come left 5 degrees, sir.
There she is, Wong. Lying there, inviting a tin fish.
Steady on course 0 right 5, sir.
Start timing.
10 seconds. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. 7 seconds. 6 seconds. 5 seconds.
Stand by to fire one.
4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. 1 second. Time up.
Fire one. Hold it down, Lou. Don't broach her.
Hold on.
Fire two. 1, 2, 3, 4. Fire three.
Steady, Wong.
Steady, sir.
Steady. Fire four. Down periscope. Left full rudder, full speed ahead.
You know, it can go now, Marley.
Take it down to 100 feet.
Just on, you know. Hong Kong, Liang, Batan, you do home, Marley, you know, Mao Zheng, you know.
Come to course 340.
340, sir.
Down to 100 feet, Captain.
Captain, did we...
Wait a minute. Wait.
Skipper, it's ahead. Two. Three. Four clean hits. Four out of four.
Four tin fish in a battle wagon's guts, Jimmy, huh? Well, just don't stand there, man. Reload. We're going back for more.
Aye, aye, Skipper. The tubes are practically ready.
Stand by to bring her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, Captain.
But four hits, Captain. Surely.
Battleships can take it, Wong. We want to be sure. Destroyers dropping depth charges. They'll be spraying them like hand grenades. Right full rudder.
Right full rudder, sir.
The boats are ready to fire again, Skipper.
Good. Stand by. Course 250.
250, sir.
Take her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, sir. Nemo, Nala.
I had time for one quick periscope exposure, and it told me everything I could want to know. The Jap battleship lay on her side, her rail under. She was sinking. On the horizon, a group of destroyers were depth charging the daylights out of some innocent fish. The fog was drifting in. It would be dark in half an hour. Well, there was no use wasting another torpedo on the battleship, and the destroyers were too tough to hit. I had 6 torpedoes left, and I wanted to save them for the big boys. I let Wong have a look through the periscope.
The battleship. We sunk battleship. Wait until we report this to our leaders.
Yeah, we aren't finished yet.
Hey, Captain, look, quickly. Another big ship, close to us.
Let me have it. It's a cruiser. 10,000 tons at least. All right, sailors, there's our next target. Left full rudder.
Left full rudder, sir.
Stand by to fire one. Yeah, we'll have to gamble this one, Wong. Yeah, I guess it's speed at 30 knots. Course 260. We'll take a 90-degree track. Down, periscope. Full speed ahead.
One speed ahead.
Wong, start timing.
10 seconds.
9 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, 6 seconds.
Just at that instant, a Jap destroyer passed over us going like a shark after Barracuda. But it was too late to stop now.
1 second.
And I gave the word to fire one, then two, then three, then four. We headed down, fast. I gotta take a look, Juan. Lou, take her up to periscope depth.
Periscope depth? Aye, aye, Captain.
Skipper, I gotta talk to you.
Come on, just a minute.
Periscope depth, Captain.
Up periscope.
Up a periscope.
Cruiser's down by the stern, Jimmy. We got her.
Captain, listen to me.
The fog's coming in again.
Captain, cell number 72 has revised itself. The storage batteries are going out.
Well, rip up the battery decks and get those jumpers across. I'll hold her speed down as low as possible.
Right, Skipper.
Take her down to 100 feet.
Captain, to periscope. Destroyer bearing down on us full speed.
Let me look. Forget the batteries. Full speed. Take her down, Lou. Take her down. Crash dive. Crash dive.
Captain, hurry up. Continue.
We moved down in a hurry. Whatever Lou was saying in Cantonese did the trick. Luck was with us. But we'd had a lifetime of luck in the past 20 minutes. It couldn't last forever. And it didn't.
Captain! Captain!
A sheet of blue flame shot through the boat. It followed the hull plates and flashed wherever moisture had collected. It made a blue halo around the sweaty faces of the men. It didn't seem hot. No one was burned. But the Chinese crew screamed in terror. Hydrogen. Hydrogen given off by the storage batteries. Something had touched it off before enough could build up to make a human bomb out of all of us. Now we had to surface, but we couldn't. Destruction was up there in the form of a Jap destroyer. Destruction down here, hydrogen. Suddenly, I glanced at the depth gauge. We were coming up. The bombing planes, paralyzed with fear, had frozen the controls on hard rise. Get her down, Lou! Get her down!
I am trying, Captain. He does not understand. Chinto, let us go!
Breaking surface, Captain.
I cannot free the man from the controls, Captain.
Captain, through a periscope. Destroyer bearing down.
The impact threw all of us to the deck. I got back up in time to see water gushing down through the conning tower hatch. A direct hit. A superstructure destroyed. Close all watertight doors. Secure the hatches.
Captain, the lights. The lights are gone out.
The circuit breaker's knocked out.
Switch out the emergency lights. Young, can you work on the circuit breakers?
Aye, aye, sir.
We're getting water in the torpedo room.
Never mind that man. Help Young with the circuit breakers.
Aye, aye, sir.
The crew, Captain. They're very frightened. The lights. The lights are on.
Lou, what's our depth?
150 feet, Captain. We are sinking rapidly.
Hard rise on the bow and stern planes.
The circuit breakers okay, Skipper, but the pumps can't handle this water.
Well, take charge of the air manifold, Jimmy. Blow out a little of number 2 main ballast.
Aye, aye, Captain.
200 feet, Captain.
We're going down too fast, Captain.
225 feet, Captain. No, no, Captain. Wait, now we are rising at 200 feet.
Captain, I do not understand.
175 feet. We are rising rapidly.
Man, vent a little air out of the ballast tank.
Tim, what is happening? First we are too deep, then we move up too swiftly.
It's the water inside the boat. It rushes forward and we dive, then back aft and we go up.
Still coming up, Captain. 100 feet.
It's no use, Skipper. The pumps can't handle our weight fast enough.
You sure the Kingston valves are open in the main ballast tank?
Yes, sir.
50 feet, Captain. Nearing surface.
Well, we'll have to take our chances on the surface, man. Blow all main ballasts.
Blow all main ballasts, Captain.
Captain! Captain!
What is it, Juan?
The crew, they don't understand what is happening. Water is filling ship.
Well, we'll be surfaced in 2 minutes.
But they have taken the knives from the ship's galley. They are crazed with fear.
Hold them off, I tell you. We're nearing surface.
Periscope depth, Captain.
Oh, never mind that, Lou. Take her up to the surface.
We're okay, Skipper. We're coming up.
Captain, listen to me. These poor farmers know nothing of submarines. They must be stopped.
Skipper, they're going for the hatch.
Juan, stop them. We're not surfaced yet.
Nearing surface, Captain.
I can't pull them back, Captain.
Captain, the water's pouring in on the batteries. Those crazy fools have opened the hatches.
Surface, Captain.
Skipper, the batteries. The salt water's pouring onto the batteries.
Captain, what is this green gas?
Juan, pass the word for all hands to abandon ship.
Skipper, if that chlorine gets to us, we're finished. Let's get out of here.
Okay, where's Young?
I don't know. He was in a Chinese mob a few minutes ago. Skipper, the chlorine spread.
Yeah. Let's get Young. Follow me.
Skipper, I don't... Skipper, look. Young.
Young.
A meat cleaver buried in his skull. He's dead, Skipper.
Well, he tried to stop that mob. He got that for his efforts.
Let's get out of here, Skipper.
Yeah, you're right, Jimmy. We can't help young. This way. You okay, Jimmy?
Sure thing, Skipper.
Those poor devils forgot to take their life jackets.
We can't help them, Skipper. They brought it on themselves.
Captain. Captain, you all right?
Yeah, all right, Warren. Where's Lou?
I don't know.
We can still save the ship, can't we, Skipper? It's the gas that drove us out.
Three men can rub a sub. Warren, the S-boat belongs to your country. We leave her this way, she might drift into the hands of the Japs.
My country needs a submarine. We have so few weapons.
Well, it's you and man and me. Do you think we can save her?
No. You've done your best, Captain. It's for you to decide.
All right. Man, take the forward hatches. Wong, you take aft. We're going to scuttle her. We scuttled the S-boat. Wong, Man, and myself. Then we drifted apart in the black, muddy Yangtze River. I looked back just once to see my boat go down steadily by the stern. She was a pig-iron wench of uncertain antecedents, but she'd been all mine, and she met her end like a lady. The last thing I remembered was the black water in the night. When I regained consciousness, I was aboard a Chinese fishing junk. And with the fish, I was delivered the following day to Ningpo.
Enough, gentlemen. You must contain your emotions. This man, this American, must be tried fairly.
As fairly as he has sunk our submarine. Do not forget that, worthy one.
You have heard his story. It is now up to us to believe it.
But you haven't heard my story. You've kept me locked up in your filthy jail for 2 days. You haven't let me wire my government. You haven't let me
please,
do any...
Please, please, Lieutenant. You are making this most unpleasant. Indeed, we have listened to your strange tale. You yourself have admitted ordering our noble submarine to be sunk.
Yeah, but what about the rest of it? The Jap battleship we sunk in the cruiser?
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not still portraying yourself in this ridiculous, heroic fantasy.
But I tell you, we sunk them, a battleship and a cruiser. Then we were forced to abandon ship. Ask the Japanese. They'll tell you we got two of their major ships before they got us.
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not so naive as to believe that our enemy, the Japanese, would admit to this, even if it were true. Tell your distinguished superiors, these gentlemen gathered here, just who saw these imagined sinkings?
I did. And so did Wong, my first officer, Lieutenant Wong. He saw them, both of them.
Ah, so there was someone else. And pray, tell us then, where is Lieutenant Wong?
I don't know. He drifted away from me during the night.
He drifted away from you during the night. I believe we may now weigh the evidence. The crime is treason against the government of China. Gentlemen, how do you find this man? You see, Lieutenant, you deserve the maximum penalty. Death tomorrow morning before the firing squad. However, we are all too aware of your American citizenship. Therefore, we shall suspend this sentence under one condition. That you leave at once and never return to China again. Is so?
So I left China. My $1,000 a month salary, my bonus now worth $100,000, the unofficial Mr. Lee,
I saw none of it or him. In the end, I was glad to be alive and to have discovered that I had my belly full of submarines for life.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you Up Periscope by Alec Hudson, especially adapted for radio by William Frug, and starring Hi Everback. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell and Edgar Berrier, with Lou Krugman, Ben Wright, Byron Kane, and Charles Lung. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
Next week, Escape with us to England and the story of an innocent man caught up in a murderous web of international intrigue, as Jeffrey Household tells it in his exciting new novel, A Rough Shoot.
A dramatic milestone on Broadway Playhouse tomorrow night and most of these same CBS stations. It's The Petrified Forest, starring Wendell Corey in the noted Robert E. Sherwood drama of romantic adventure. For a listening treat, be sure not to miss The Petrified Forest on CBS Radio tomorrow night. It's a sparkling addition to Broadway Playhouse's long list of outstanding dramatic productions. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, Escape, past episodes of this podcast, and all the others at relicradio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you enjoy this show, would like to help support this and all of the shows. Relic Radio is listener supported. I appreciate your help and I appreciate you listening today. I'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.